shotgun. Oh, light ain't gonna start a shooting again. Go bring me my shotgun. You know I just gotta start shooting again. You know I'm gonna shoot my woman, 'cause she's fooling around with too many men.
There's a man you don't mess with right there.
He takes no shit.
Lightnin' Hopkins. I like how he decided to shoot his woman because she was fooling around with too many men. It's okay to fool around with a few men.
One could be too many.
Sure.
Yes, bring me my shotgun. Yes, man in a pocket full of shells. Yes, go bring me my shotgun. Yes, man in a pocket full of shells. Yeah, you know I'm gonna kill that woman. I'm gonna throw her in that old deep dug well.
Where else would you put her?
Hide her from everybody.
In that old deep dug well.
It's a good hiding spot, I would think.
All right, everybody. It's a Brian and Vinny show here on March 9th, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. SmackDown Raw, the best of WrestleMania, at least as of 1991. And Vinny's going to give his thoughts for all of you out there who cannot wait to hear more about the TNA house show in Kent, Washington. He's going to give you his thoughts. What do you think of that, everybody?
We talked about that already.
We did?
Yes.
When?
We did a special Friday night show.
That's right. It all blends together after a while.
Well, that's true, but yes.
That's right, we did talk about that, didn't we?
Uh-huh.
We talked about when Earl Hebner told the fan to shut the fuck up.
Yep.
I LOL'd when I heard that.
Well, I did too, but I heard it on the show. So.
I got a chance to show Whitney Earl in his younger days here tonight, back when he had hair.
Yeah, well, he was much younger.
He was younger in 1986, Vinny. That is a correct fact.
I realize how stupid that sounds, but believe me, he was much younger.
Well, he is 25 years older now.
Yeah, but Hogan's 25 years older and looks virtually the same.
Oh, really?
Well, maybe not.
Gotta be kidding me. All right, well, I guess we don't have to talk about the TNA house show then. That upsets me.
Well, we can... why don't you just hit play from Friday's show, and we'll just listen to ourselves talk about it.
You want to sit here and listen to our recap of that show for an hour?
I don't want to do that.
All right, well, that's a stupid suggestion.
But I would rather do that than talk about it again.
Would you really?
I don't know.
I'll bet you'd rather talk about the whole show again.
I have nothing new to say. I have nothing happened in the ensuing 3 days to make me rethink anything from that show.
Really?
You thought I would change my mind on something?
I don't know. After watching Raw?
No. What on Raw would make me feel differently about the TNA house show?
I'm just trying to get people to think here, Vinny.
I hate thinking.
I was going to say something, but I'm just going to move on. Why don't we talk about SmackDown then?
I love the show.
SmackDown?
I like the show. My love may be strong.
I didn't love it. I didn't want to marry it.
No, certainly not. Although I did have the same epiphany watching this show that you talked about in the lead story in the newsletter this week. About how the amount of wrestling on a show in and of itself is irrelevant to whether or not it's a good show. There was, I checked, one site said there was 17 minutes of wrestling on SmackDown. That certainly sounds right. And there was 12 minutes of wrestling on Impact, which is slightly less, but realistically about 12? The same. 12?
Wait a second.
That's...
I didn't even realize there was that little. I can remember a couple of years ago when there would be like 19 minutes of wrestling on Impact and people would be up in arms. Only 19 minutes?
Yeah.
Now we're down to 12 and people don't even blink.
To me, that does not count the Sting... Jeff Hardy match in the Overrun.
I see.
But there was 12 minutes in 2 hours of wrestling, yes.
All right, well, that doesn't
work. Or 12 minutes of wrestling in 2 hours of television.
So it probably hit about 19.
It was 15. Jeff and Sting did not go long.
It only went 3 minutes?
I bet it did not go seven.
I don't know about that. Anyway, what was your point?
Point being, while I was watching SmackDown, I was aware there was very little wrestling on it, but I did not care. Because the non-wrestling stuff was good. Whereas on Impact, when there's not wrestling going on, that show sucks. And to be fair, often when there is wrestling going on, the show still sucks. But generally speaking, the wrestling is a highlight of that show, and they never do it.
How about the revelation that when you watch Impact, there's an overwhelming sense of sadness and woe?
That's certainly true, too. It is a very negative show.
Does anything fun ever happen on Impact?
It's been a long-ass time.
Like, occasionally you get, like, a Machine Guns or a Beer Money match. But, I mean, other than that...
Maybe a...
Like, is there ever anything written by Vince Russo that is not negative?
No.
Never.
It's always people not getting along.
Ever.
Or hating women. Or the babyface is screwing up and getting screwed.
No wonder I hate that show. I'm such a positive person. That must be why all the negative people that send me the angry emails like Impact. Because they're full of their own negativity.
Well, I think it's because they're retarded.
Oh, Vinny, we can't say that.
Sure you can. It's not public. No one's listening to the show anyway. Come on.
How about we get moving?
Night. SmackDown, then?
That would be the plan, homie.
They opened SmackDown with a recap of the Vicky Guerrero being fired angle from the week before. This was great news because it means we got to enjoy Wacky Dancing Edge for the second week in a row. If I were them, I would put Wacky Dancing Edge in the show intro, the opening video package. So he came out to talk about his contract signing with Alberto. He also talked about Vicky being fired. So he got attacked by Alberto and never got to sing the goodbye song, so he was going to hear, and I screamed, "Good Lord, no! I don't need to hear Ed singing again." Thank God Drew McIntyre hit the ring. He was disposed of like a chump. Teddy Long came out, said everyone owed Drew a debt of gratitude because thanks to him, Vicky was fired. Said Drew would also be fired if he didn't wrestle Edge right now. So Ed said Teddy was right in that Drew getting pinned cost Vicky her job. Therefore, the crowd, everyone should thank Drew for getting her fired. And he led the crowd in chants of, "Thank you, Drew." I hope that chant does not stick. Kind of sucks. So, Drew McIntyre versus Edge in the opener.
Why would they ever chant that again for any reason?
I don't know. It's just one of those dumb things they may try. But they had a fun little TV match. And then at the end... Edge went for his comeback. He hit the spear, made a cover, but pulled Drew up at two. I wrote Albert, but it was Drew McIntyre. And then he pulled him up at two and then locked in his wacky half sharpshooter submission for the win. It was a good TV match that reminded us all the world champion is a badass who you should not fuck with. This is a win.
When was the last time someone pulled someone up by the hair at two?
Been a long ass time.
I can't even remember. Years ago, I would guess.
Yeah.
Watch it happen 2 weeks ago on Raw or something, but I don't remember.
Especially when they pick him up and then just win with another move immediately. Usually if you pick someone up at a two, it's a sign that you have just been stupid and you're about to be screwed for your stupidity.
Yeah.
So Cody came out in a suit and Rey Mysterio's mask doing Rey Mysterio's entrance. That was really, really creepy. He did a monologue. Can't call this a promo. he was an actor doing a monologue in a play. It was not a pro wrestling promo in any way, shape, or form. It was good for what it was. But it was very long, a very long soliloquy he delivered. Said that he had gotten together with Dusty and asked Dusty to set Ray up for a double cross. He demanded the fans not look at him. Said he convinced Dusty to help set up Ray so he could inflict a fraction of the damage to Ray's face that Ray had done to his. He said rubbing Ray's face into the ramp felt good. It was the right thing to do. Ray was not going to stop him from winning the world championship. Challenged him to a match at WrestleMania is the point of this, and it was good.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I think dashing Cody Rhodes as the non-dashing Cody Rhodes is actually quite dashing. I still am waiting for someone to explain to me why his mask is see-through. That kind of kills the gimmick, since you can see through it.
And see, he's not scarred.
Why does he want us to not look at him? His mask is see-through. He looks exactly the same. He has no scars. He's not disfigured in any way. At least he could wear a Phantom of the Opera mask, for Christ's sake.
That would look cooler.
Why?
I don't know.
Get this.
No, that part I don't get. But yes, he is no longer goofing off talking about facial cream or moisturizers. He is an angry man, bitter man, looking for revenge.
Great.
Yes. So, Kane was hanging out backstage. I mean, literally just standing there.
This was the worst fucking segment in the history of Earth.
It was not good. It was at least short.
No, this was the worst segment in the history of Earth. Of the Earth.
Of the Earth, you say.
Yeah. I've never seen... Even the women's match on Raw Monday was better
separated.
Than this. Before. Since there was one giant Pangea.
Yes.
Nothing has been worse than this. I've never seen...
I don't think it was quite that bad.
I can't even call this bad acting. Because it wasn't even acting. This was... I don't know what this was. Everyone involved in this was the dirt worst. The absolute dirt worst. Kane was horrible. Wade was horrible. Gabriel was horrible. Slater was horrible. Zeke was horrible. Am I missing anybody?
Well, whoever wrote the dialogue, because the dialogue was also horrible.
This was just horrible.
They reminded Kane that his greatest victory came when someone else had played a pivotal role. And I actually first thought they were talking about when he cashed in Money in the Bank to beat a weakened Rey Mysterio. But they never mentioned what they were talking about. Only later did I realize, I bet they meant that Buried Alive match.
Of course they did.
But they couldn't mention it here.
Apparently not.
The only thing I can think of is they didn't want to remind us that Undertaker was back and not going for revenge against Kane and Core.
Or they didn't want to remind us that Undertaker had lost in his last match.
That could be it, too. So they told Kane they wanted him to beat Big Show. Yeah. We had Justin Gabriel and Heath Slater versus Kozlov and Santino.
This is why I'm wondering how you could have liked this show. Two horrible segments in a row.
This
match
very much
sucked.
Not good.
Never need to see this match again.
No, I never need to see...
Until the continents drift to the point where they become a Pangea again, I don't need to see this match.
I'm hoping this means we'll never see Kozlov and Santino as a team again. Unless they just let them be complete amateur badasses and throw dudes around. That's the only way it can be saved.
Ain't gonna happen.
But it's not going to happen. So they're just going to be horrible pro wrestlers who cannot take snapmares, as Kozlov showed here.
No good.
They announced that Christian would be back on SmackDown next week. They replayed the angle where Alberto tore his pec from 6 months ago, and they showed Christian making the save for Edge at the Elimination Chamber.
You know, as of today, Christian will have returned 3 times before his big return.
Yes.
He returned a week ago. He returned on this very show. He returned on Raw. And now he's supposed to have his actual return on Friday.
They're dumb.
Oh, yeah.
They're fucking dumb. Alberto was backstage with his crew.
That was disgusting.
I don't know what you did, but swallowing in the microphone.
Don't ever do that again.
Alberto was backstage with his crew. Ricardo was warming up his voice. There was an artist there working on a portrait. This was the greatest 10-second segment ever.
Why were they doing a portrait of Alberto Del Rio?
Because Alberto was a great man who wanted a portrait of himself.
What did this have to do with his contract signing?
It was a special event. He wanted to make it as memorable as possible.
So later, Edge defaced it, and that led to nothing.
That's true.
I'm just mentioning it.
Well, you're not wrong about that part. It led to nothing. The defacing led to nothing. I just like the idea that Alberto would want a portrait of himself, mind you.
Well, I've wanted one of those for a long time.
Well, see, there you go.
You know?
It's made it great.
Right in the entryway, when you walk in the door, there's me.
I picture you giving a giant thumbs up.
No. I just want to sit there. I want the portrait to be of me in a custom suit with my arms crossed, just looking stern at everyone that comes in.
I'm trying to think of where that would go. That would get a wall.
Right when you walk in the door, that big blank wall.
Oh, like on the side?
The angle.
I see. Okay.
Vince, you walk in and there's walls on each side, and then there's an angle one here, and then there's the stairs. That angled one right there.
So like above the floor.
As opposed to above the sea?
So you actually walk underneath this wall to get into the living room. I may make you take me downstairs to show me which wall you mean.
Turn around right now.
Okay.
All right, you see that wall that's at an angle right there?
Yeah.
There's one of those right when you walk in the door. So you'd put the portrait right where that panel is.
Okay, so it's not facing the door.
Of course it's facing the door. It's just at a little bit of an angle.
This panel's not facing me.
Can we move on?
Fine. They replayed Hunter's promo from Raw. Taker came out to offer his rebuttal. It was every Undertaker entrance ever, except he's now using the Johnny Cash song as his theme music.
Not to mention, it doesn't matter if the wall's not facing you, I'll be facing you. I'll be like one of those portraits that's always looking at you.
I see. Why not just a statue?
That's not a bad idea,
all
actually.
Right. There you go. So yes, in 2011, they're using a Johnny Cash song as theme music, and it works is the amazing thing.
Well, if I had a statue, you could sneak in and put a wig on it, so when I woke up in the morning, I'd see myself defaced. I don't want that.
I could do that to your portrait as well.
It'll be too high.
I'm tall.
I'll cut your legs off.
Then I'll have greater problems to worry about than defacing a portrait.
Exactly.
You will cut my legs off, you say.
What are we talking
the big
about
sword?
On the show? I'm in rare form tonight. I won't lie.
So, Taker said there were mountains that cannot be climbed, seas that cannot be sailed, and streaks that cannot be broken. So he couldn't disagree with much of what Hunter had said. They were the last of an era and a dying breed. He called Hunter the greatest world champion over the last decade and a half.
Dying breed is a term I would not have used.
Why is that?
Because a lot of them are dying!
Because a lot of them are dying? All right. Well, when you put it that way. He said Hunter had figured out how to make The Undertaker disappear forever, beat him at WrestleMania. Said if Hunter won, he would truly be the King of Kings. But if he loses, and he will lose, he would be just another statistic, another man who had lost to Undertaker at Mania. Said he played no game and bowed down to no man, especially the King of Kings. And finally said Hunter would rest in peace. It was fine.
It's fine.
The re-aired clips of the Sin Cara press conference. This was hysterical because this probably happened on Monday too, but I didn't notice that time. I noticed that Cole and Josh were calling him Sin Cara.
I mentioned that last time we were on the show.
What I didn't notice was that as they were saying that name, you could hear the fans in Mexico chanting Sin Cara. So they had no idea what they were doing.
Of course not.
Rosa Mendez and Beth Phoenix versus Lay Cool. This was...
Oh, God. How did you like this show?
The non-wrestling stuff. This one, the wrestling was bad. Yes.
The only good thing about this was Booker announcing that Rosa Mendez has a lot of salsa.
He did say that. The story of this match was Michelle has a broken foot.
Toe.
She has a giant, heavy walking boot on her foot, and she was wrestling in it. So here she was, gallantly fighting through an injury with the faces mercilessly targeting it and working her over 2-on-1. They got the heat on Rosa until they bumped into each other. Layla shoved Michelle and asked what she was doing. Michelle shoved her back and said, and I quote, "My foot hurts!" I LOL'd. Then they did lots of spots with the boot where she either tried to kick someone and missed, and that hurt her foot. Then later she kicked Beth in the head with her bad foot, and Layla got the pin. Yes, this was phony.
I hated this. I like how they acted like the boot must be loaded.
It's a giant
surgical boot!
They could not figure out why her foot would be heavy.
It put lead in it on top of just the fact that it's hard?
It is a weapon, yes. We then had a Big Show versus Kane.
Oh, God, this show.
This. Well, okay. We've seen this guy's wrestle like twice a year, every year for the past decade. It's never any good. This was looking to be the worst of all because Kane is noticeably limping and favoring his groin. Thankfully, it only went like a minute.
He's noticeably limping and favoring his groin?
Yes. Go back and watch. He was in bad shape here. He couldn't... I realize Kane's always immobile, but he was significantly worse than usual here. Which is probably why it was short, but that's okay.
Was he grabbing at his genitals? Favoring his...
He was limping, and as he ran, he had to restrain himself from grabbing his inner thigh. Rough shape.
Maybe he just got snipped.
I suppose it's possible. He may have converted. So,
that kind of snipped.
What do you mean?
You know, fixed.
Oh, so there won't be any Kane Sito's running around.
Yes.
Oh, that's possible, too. So, Cora ran down. They attacked Big Show for the DQ. They were beating him up.
He converted.
I screwed this up. They gave Kane a chair. Kane whacked Big Show for the DQ. Then Cora jumped on Big Show. and then hit Gabriel. Kane hit Gabriel in the back with a chair, and Cora ran away. Everyone was confused, and I presume this will somehow lead to Big Show and Kane as wacky tag team partners who don't get along against the Court Mania.
Yep.
Well, that's... Yeah, that was dumb.
Although they probably will get along. This ain't TNA.
They replayed the HBK promo from Raw talking about Hunter and Undertaker. Jack Swagger came out. I should have hated this, but it was wacky, so I couldn't. Michael Cole interviewed him. He said he had welcomed Swagger to Team Cole. They re-aired the clip of Michael Cole slapping Lawler while standing behind Swagger. Cole said he wanted people to, quote, watch what I do here. Watch how much of a man I am. Slapping Jerry Lawler in the face, putting Lawler in his place. He vowed to make Lawler tap out at Mania. Grabbed a house mic, got in the ring. Said Swagger was going to train him to a victory over Lawler. He vowed to reveal the guest referee on Raw. He said the man was grandiose, flamboyant, and awesome. Michael Cole was a shining star here. Great man. Then we had Swagger versus JTG. Cole was still being fantastic. Spent literally the entire match cutting a promo about Swagger and all that Swagger was teaching him. They cut to the announce desk. He is standing and gesturing to the ring as Booker and Josh look miserably bored. Cole vowed to execute a Vader bomb at WrestleMania. I wouldn't bet on that. Could be wrong, but I wouldn't bet on it. And then Swagger destroyed JTG and tapped him out with the ankle lock. This was a better win for Jack Swagger than anything he did when he was the World Heavyweight Champion.
Yes, that is true.
That is true and sad. And they had a great party afterwards. This was a fun segment.
I guess.
Cole
is fine. He's great as a cowardly heel.
But he's also doing play-by-play.
Also doing play-by-play is a killer.
But I agree. I totally agree. But in this match in particular, he wasn't doing play-by-play. He was being a heel manager promoting his...
He was supposed to be.
No, actually not this one. He was playing the part of a heel manager talking about how great his wrestler was. I thought he was great here. And for this segment, his role worked. They did a great video package with all the Rock and Cena promos, although I don't know how much of that was making it a great video production and how much of it was just that the guys had cut great promos before Monday. I want to make that clear.
I was going to say, by the guys, you mean Rock and Rocky Maivia?
I thought the first Cena promo was great. Second one was definitely not. Edge was walking around backstage, ran into Alberto's portraitist. The portrait was clearly a big blown-up photograph. That made me laugh. So Edge painted on a big curly mustache and a unibrow and a pointy beard.
Which led to nothing!
And then he gave it back to the artist. He planted his foot in the artist's buttocks. He shoved the man to the ground. And the painter fell to earth, smote down, never to move again. He just fell down... dead. Edge looked at him for a second or two, confirmed he was dead, and then walked away. I laughed hard at that. Maybe I'm the only one.
Well, takes all kinds.
So they did the contract signing. Alberto did his usual entrance. Said the only proper way to begin this contract signing was with the Mexican national anthem. He commanded Ricardo to sing. Ricardo sang two verses, then commanded the audience, everybody, to join in. How can you not like this show? Just for that right there.
It was quite great.
It was great. Edge interrupted. They had a stare down over the table. Teddy begged for the first time ever in the history of SmackDown, can this be a contract signing that will not end up in chaos? And all the fans went, no! I love the show. So Edge warned Alberto that once the contract was signed, there would be no turning back. Said Alberto didn't know what it was like to fight on the biggest stage in the world, but he was an 11-time champion. Alberto said he knew that was in the past, so that this paper wasn't just a contract, it was his destiny. Edge said destiny can change in the blink of an eye, and your destiny could be Edge beating you at WrestleMania, and you'll be a flash in the pan who was famous for one moment. Alberto said, listen to me, Perro, and the scattered Mexicans in the crowd went, ooh, and he signed the contract and said, this is the beginning of the end for you. Edge paused for a moment, but then he signed, and he told Teddy that basically things were about to get violent. Teddy ran for his life. They had a brawl. Edge was about to hit the spear, but Ricardo grabbed his ankle, and Alberto cut him off and put the cross arm breaker on. Edge got a bloody nose in here somewhere, and it was great because Alberto had a white shirt on. He sent him outside. He was about to break Edge's arm with a chair when Christian, who was supposed to debut next week, or return next week, ran out to make the save. He beat Alberto's ass. And it show ended with Alberto and Ricardo on the ramp and Edge and Christian arm in arm on the floor and staring each other down. And
what a great tag match that would be.
Are you kidding me? That would be
Alberto
awesome.
Alberto and Ricardo Rodriguez against Edge and Christian.
Money. Yeah. That is cash money.
Well, unfortunately, you're going to get Brodus Clay instead of Ricardo Rodriguez.
That is...
Well, actually, I'm fine.
You know
with,
what? Yeah. that is to be determined.
Fine with Brodus Clay. I thought he did a ride on Raw.
He managed to have a good match with Christian.
Yep.
Which means he would probably be okay doing a tag match, so yeah.
Well, I don't know. Christian gets good matches out of guys who are no good, so...
That is true.
Let's play a song here. Pardon me. Funk Fears Rap? Let's try this one. From The Free Thinker. Funk rapping about...
But I'm not going to say it, and I'm not going to... I'm going to spell it out to you people. I'm going to spell it out to you people. I'm going to spell it out to you people. R-E-A-R-R-E-A-R-R-E-A-R.
Rear?
It'll shock you. The word is R-E-A-R.
Rear?
And that's exactly what Dusty Rhodes is going to have. R-E-A-R.
Rear.
Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes. Dusty Rhodes is going to have R-E-A-R. He's drugged on his own ego. Ego. Dusty Rhodes is dumb. He is ignorant. He does not show any respect. Dusty Rhodes is going to have R-E-A-R.
Somebody needs to put that on a Sesame Street video.
Rear.
Is that better or worse than the Cena rap?
Oh, God, better.
Vinny, I'm giving you 3 minutes to do the Raw report. We spent too much time on this show. I recapped it with Dave yesterday anyway. Give us the highlights and the lowlights.
The lowlight was John Cena's crappy promo. It was lame comedy all the way through. He acted like the whole thing was a joke, then bragged about what a great win it was. He came off like a dork. Made Miz like a dork and made you wish that Rock had a better opponent for Mania. How's that for the low light?
The low light of that was that you trying to say the word dork.
Ironically, dorks can't say dork.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, you can't do anything right. The highlight was the... What the hell was the highlight? There was something here. The Michael Cole JBL Steve Austin segment.
That's pretty good.
This was great. Cole was in the ring to announce his special referee... Said he wanted an impartial ref who would call things down the middle. Said it was a former WWE champ, a legendary Texan, led the fans in chants of Austin. Then he stopped and looked into the camera and said, "You people are fools!" I love Michael Cole now. The past 2 weeks, I've gone from wanting to kill him to loving him.
Well, that's not good.
I don't care. It makes me happy.
So they've killed WrestleMania already.
Sure. Well, no. Michael Cole did not have by WrestleMania heat. He had... Go away. I can't even say go away heat. He had fucking die heat.
Vinny.
I wanted him to fucking die.
Vinny, that's terrible.
Now I can't wait for him to be on TV. It's better. So JBL came out. He was Cole's choice as guest ref. He buried Texas, people who live there. He accused Jerry Lawler of being a bully and said, "I hate bullies. So it's wrong that the strong pick on the weak just because they can."
That's what he said.
More on this later. Said he, when he signed his contract, it meant JBL came home. He's about to sign when Steve Austin interrupted. "We have not heard Austin's music in many years. You know, Jim Johnston did all the music for WWE.
It was last year.
You know, a long time. Steve Austin's theme song really is fantastic. For being just a simple song from a guy who really just did about four tunes over and over again. That one was his masterpiece. So he came out, he wanted to talk to Michael Cole, actually, but JBL stood in the way, and they jibber-jabbered for a while until finally JBL got stunned. Austin was celebrating, drinking beer. Michael Cole went to hide. Austin finally spied the contract. A fan held up a Tilde Bang sign in the front row. And Austin finally picked up the contract, asked if he wanted to sign it. The fan said, hell yeah. So he signed it, poured some beer on Michael Cole. And then finally he offered another beer to JBL. JBL was hesitant, reluctantly accepted. And then Austin, of course, kicked him in the gut and stunned him again. Because you see, when heels are stupid enough to get fooled over and over again, that's funny.
I wonder who did the Tilde Bang sign. I didn't even noticed it.
It was huge and bright pink.
Really?
Yes.
Must have been Pingu Girl.
Sure, in Texas. Now, a note on JBL and bullies. Shortly after this segment, Joey Styles sent out the tweet of the year.
Yes.
Just going to read exactly what it said. I just interviewed JBL for WWE.com. Here's his newest company, www.newleafbrands.com. As a father, I liked his anti-bullying comments.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, JBL, I'm sure, has turned over a new leaf.
Perhaps he has.
That's the name of his thing.
Yes. We had Bryan Danielson being the... I cannot fathom this. Bryan Danielson was the darker-skinned man in a wrestling match.
Yeah.
He looked like Taz next to Sheamus. And is there an update on Sheamus' health, by the way?
What do you mean?
I thought that he hurt his leg even before he started selling. As he fell to the mat outside, I thought he fucked his leg up. And sure enough, he grabbed it and started screaming.
I have not heard anything today, actually.
Perhaps I'm a fool.
Could be.
But you never know.
Wouldn't be the first time.
That's true. That's true. Oh, have we gone 3 minutes yet?
We've gone 4 minutes.
Okay.
That's the Raw report, everybody. Is there anything you must comment on, Vinny?
Dude, I don't feel the need to do this show ever.
Is there anything you feel you must comment on here, Vinny, on the Raw? All right. Let's play another song, and then we're going to talk about something I really want. People are going to be so pissed off that we didn't do Raw. Run over the segments we haven't talked about yet.
I just closed my notes.
You don't remember it by heart?
No. There was stuff with, like, Miz. Actually, there wasn't on the show.
The Miz thing at the end, everyone thought was so great. Listen, everybody.
Why?
Your standards have fallen. Miz did an average Miz promo. He just happened to follow John Cena doing a horrendous promo.
John Cena's promo was horrendous. Miz came out, laid him out with a belt. Okay, here's what I remember. He's cutting this promo. He hit one belt shot, okay? John Cena is laying on his back, spread eagled, arms and legs, you know, spread out in all four directions. Miz is cutting this promo over his unconscious body. John Cena may as well have had X's drawn over his eyes and birds flying around his head. It was completely cartoony. And then Miz cut a acceptable promo, threatened The Rock, stole his catchphrase, did a people's elbow, whoop-de-shit.
I don't know what people saw in this promo. I mean, yes, it was better than John Cena's. That's saying nothing!
Yes.
How good would this promo have been if it would have followed The Rock last week?
Poor.
How good would it have been if it followed The Rock on the first week?
Poor.
How good would it have been if it followed Cena that first week?
Not quite as poor, but poor.
It would have been fine. It would have been acceptable. Listen, everybody. I realize it's 2011, and the art of wrestling has been lost on many of you. But a promo is about making you want to see dudes fight. A promo is not about somebody having good delivery or having passion. It's not about that at all. The Rock's promo last week was awesome because Rock felt passionately about the temerity of John Cena talking about how he did not love wrestling. When The Rock is done with his promos, I am begging for Rock to kick the ass of John Cena. Even Cole, when Cole's done with some of his promos or when Lawler's done doing his promos, I really want to see Lawler punch Michael Cole right in the face. Okay? When Miz was done with his promo, it was like he delivered that well. Do I really care at all about Miz versus John Cena? No. Do I really think that there's any possibility in the world that The Miz is going to beat up The Rock the next time they see each other? Not a chance in hell. So, to me, it really wasn't that great a promo. He delivered it well. He delivered his lines well. But was it a promo that added a single buy to WrestleMania? Of course not. You know, Rock's promos have been adding buys to WrestleMania. You look at like the ratings for the show since Rock came back. You know, Rock talks, people tune in. Miz talks, Miz wrestles, people tune out. You can go look at the ratings. Miz's segments on Raw have done horrible in the ratings. So, I've said this a million times, and people keep asking. You know, someone sent me an email today. You keep saying that Miz is a geek. You know, what can they do? Why is Miz a geek? Why do you keep saying this? He's gotten a couple of wins of late. That's great. Yes. Again, this is just like the Miz's promo. Miz getting a couple of wins of late is better than Miz having to get help to beat everybody for months and months and never getting a clean win. Okay? We've gone from a 0 to a 1. We're nowhere near a 10. You want to know how to make Miz a champion? You have to book him like you book John Cena or how you book Randy Orton. That's what you got to do. And don't even tell me that he's a heel and so that he's not allowed to win or beat anybody. Why don't you go look at Alberto Del Rio on Raw and then look at The Miz? There's a gigantic difference between the two. In fact, I wrote about this when I wrote about SmackDown this week. Why do I go nuts when Alex Riley runs in during Miz matches, but I don't say anything when Ricardo Rodriguez runs in on Alberto Del Rio matches? You want to know why? Because they're two completely different things. Because Alberto Del Rio has been beating everybody. He beats everybody. He beats them clean. And he beats them clean via submission with his armbar. Let's go back and look at how many people Alberto has beaten clean with his finisher in the last several months. Now, let's look at how many people that The Miz has beaten clean with his finisher in the last couple of months. It is a dramatic, drastic difference. So, when you've got a heel that actually does beat people with his finish, then every now and then, when he's going up against a top guy and he finds himself in trouble, it's okay for the manager to come in and help him out of a jam. But when you never fucking beat anybody, and every time you win, it's because you have a manager helping you, you can't just suddenly give a guy a couple of wins and expect him to be taken seriously. They're going to need to give Miz wins over top guys for like a year before he's going to be taken seriously because they've done so much damage to him. He's a geek. I couldn't even believe the guy that was trying to compare Miz to Ric Flair. He's like, Ric Flair always had the Horsemen running in the 80s. You're comparing The Miz to Ric Flair. Listen, if you're already over, if you're already a megastar, then yeah, it's okay to win by the skin of your teeth here and there. But when your career has been, you were a reality star, then you were on Tough Enough, and you got humiliated by Daniel Puter in a fake boxing match, which was actually a real boxing match, but there were these giant oversized gloves, and you just got completely humiliated. Then you were widely considered the weak link in the team with John Morrison. Then you got a singles push, and you had a feud with John Cena where you were just made a complete fool of, and you were just beaten like a drum every single week. Then you backdoor your way into the title, winning Money in the Bank, winning the title over a guy that had just had a match. And then every match you win after that is because somebody ran in. You're trying to tell me that this guy is Ric Flair in the 80s? Get a life. It's completely different. I don't even know how people can't even see this. Nobody takes Miz seriously. And it's going to take more than a month of beating a couple of guys for people to take him seriously. His promos, you know, he's as a worker, he's fine. His promos are pretty good. He's got a lot of passion. But he's not The Rock. He's not booked like John Cena or Randy Orton or any of these other guys. So don't try and make comparisons to these things. They're all completely different. Alberto Del Rio has been booked so much better than Miz, it's not even funny. I'm done. Anything to add to this?
I just
ranted myself dry.
I'm just looking over Alberto's match record here. You know the last time Alberto lost a singles match? November.
Really? How about that?
November 29th to John Morrison.
Wow.
And if you look back in the month leading up to that, he has a few losses, but he also has wins over Big Show, wins over Kofi, a draw with Edge, a win over John Morrison. So yes, he wins all the time.
I've been wrong before, everybody, but mark my words on this. Once WrestleMania is over, Miz is going to be a high mid-carder. Miz is going to be about where CM Punk is right now. Maybe even a little bit lower. Why do I know this? Because I can see the guys that Vince is behind and sees as long-term prospects. They're guys like Alberto Del Rio. They don't lose. They don't need help to win. Yes, maybe one of these days, a couple of years down the road, Miz will have been around long enough and he'll be healthy enough that maybe he'll get a career like Chris Jericho, where it took Chris Jericho, like, you know, he had to be in WWE for like 6 years and then leave and then come back 2 years later when a bunch of other big stars had left. And then they finally trusted him enough to give him a big push, and he ended up getting Wrestler of the Year. But you're looking at a 6 year journey at least for Miz, because to try to compare Miz now to Chris Jericho when he started, I don't know about that one. But it's going to be a long ass road. But Alberto Del Rio, a year from now, huge star still. I can see this. And you can all look back and you can call me stupid now and you can tell me I don't know what I'm talking about. But just get back to me in 6 months and then we'll talk. Let me play a song and then we'll do the best of WrestleMania. Triple H, Bert, and Ernie.
H.
No, oh, for crying out H. loud. I was watching my favorite program and oh, now this H comes on the screen. H has... Let's see if I can fix it. Maybe if I change channels, that might help. Oh, no good. Oh, for crying out loud. How am I going to fix this stupid set? Well, I was watching my favorite program, The Wonderful World of Pigeons, and all of a sudden, this H comes on the screen.
Oh, well, did you...
No. I'm sorry.
Not a fan.
That one didn't work. That one did not work. I apologize, Freethinker. Let's do one more here. And this is from Fuzz Hardman, who I berated last time for not sending me his song in MP3. He actually sent it in MP3 and called me dad. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but here we go.
All righty. This is from the underwear giant, the Wabash Wiener. Elijo del Accordion Penis.
Man Meat Munson.
What's with all the penis names signing up? This is from Suck My Dick Big Cock 26.
What you gonna do with all that
cock?
All that
cock
inside your ass. I'm
teabagging retarded girls.
Get you love drunk off my
CM Hump? CM
Hump?
CM
Hump? My lovely
fat blubbering mangina.
I drive these fuckers crazy.
I hate the Hispanic folk.
They treat me really nicely. They
slobber your knob.
Dolce and Gabbana, Fendi and Madonna, Karen, they be
shaking.
Did you turn that down or was that a fade out?
That was a fade out. That was lewd. All right, I suppose we should talk about the 24/7 WrestleMania's greatest hits. By the way, I just have a question for everybody here. Where in the hell are the roundtables on 24/7? I have never in my life on WWE Classics On Demand on Comcast seen a single roundtable. We looked for it tonight.
We did, and lastly one tonight. I've seen them before, usually in the Legends section.
I cannot find them anywhere. I've never seen one on there. Maybe I'm stupid.
I've watched one or two, so they must have been on there at some point.
I remember you watching one like a long-ass time ago, like 2 years ago.
It wasn't the condo.
Yeah! It's at least, that's over a year ago.
Yeah.
So, if they're still existing, everybody, how do you see them? And don't tell me to go online. Not going to do that. All right. Sean Mooney hosted this.
It was old.
It was 1991, they said. This was
that's 20 years ago.
Some of the best matches in the history of WrestleMania. Open with Hulk Hogan against King Kong Bundy from WrestleMania 2. At the time, this was not a classic, suffice to say. I would not say it's a classic today.
I was going to say.
But having seen so many lame cage matches from bookers who don't even know what the point of a cage match is, this was awesome. There were two guys in a damn cage. There was not even a referee in there. There was only, you could only go over the top or you could go out the door. That was how you won. King Kong Bundy was a giant. Hulk Hogan was a hero. Hulk Hogan ran wild a bit. The giant cut him off and beat the crap out of him. Hogan juiced. Then he fought back and threw the giant into the cage a bunch of times. Tried a body slam, couldn't get it because the giant was too fat.
But then later he got it because he never gave up. And he finally climbed out the cage, won, and then took the manager, Bobby Heenan, into the ring. And this is where on Impact all the heels would run down and beat up Hulk Hogan. Not here! He beat up Bobby Heenan. He left him laying. Everybody just went absolutely nuts. The more years that go by, the more I realize what the 80s were and why Hulk Hogan worked so big.
And made so much money.
He was a big, giant, jacked up baby face that never lost. Now, granted, that would work in any era. But in the 80s in particular, I mean, if Hogan would have come around in the 70s or the 90s, I think he still would have been big. But I don't know if he would have been as big as he was because it was the 80s. This was like the perfect era for Hulk Hogan. So anyway, this was like a perfectly fine, pretty good cage match, actually.
It was totally fine. It was basically, it was every Hulk Hogan title defense against a big fat guy you ever saw.
Sure.
They did the exact same program with Bundy and Kamala and One Man Gang. And probably would have if Bam Bam Bigelow had just come along a little earlier. A big fat man would run in Earthquake. They did the same thing with Earthquake. A big fat man would run in, squish Hogan, hurt his ribs, do a match. Hogan would fight through the rib injury, hit the big body slam and the leg drop and win. And yeah. This is one of those.
Great.
And it was fine.
I enjoyed it.
It was just fine. We had Randy Savage versus Teddy DiBiase in the title tournament finals from WrestleMania 4. The whole point of this really was, it was Randy Savage versus Teddy DiBiase, but the whole point was just for Hulk Hogan to have his guy win. It was all done to set up the Savage-Hogan match a year later at WrestleMania. So Savage is out there. He has Liz. DiBiase is out there with Andre the Giant. This is an advantage for Ted. Andre tripped Savage twice in the first minute. And then later, Savage went to hit an axe handle off the top rope to the floor, but Andre stood in his way. So Savage knew he was fucked as long as he was alone against two men out there. So he sent Liz to the back to get Hogan. The fans were chanting Hogan's name. The announcers were dropping hints like, you know what happened the last time she went to the back? Sure enough, she came back with Hogan like a minute later. So he grabs a chair. He's sitting there minding his own business. And
I like how Hogan didn't come out until he was summoned by Liz. I wonder if they turned. They should have made a bigger deal of that.
Like he was a dick?
Like why, you know, he's watching on the monitor backstage and this big giant trips his buddy twice and he's just like, oh, he can't overcome this. But then Liz comes back and he's got to run down to help.
There were a lot of points where you look back at Hulk Hogan's feud and he really was booked like an asshole.
Sure. He cheated all the time.
In many of his feuds. He hit women.
Yeah.
He broke the rules, but he was Hulk Hogan, so he got away with it. So then DiBiase is beating up Savage for a long time. Went up top, he got press slammed off. Savage scampered to the top rope. This is one chance to get a win. He went for his big elbow, but he missed. DiBiase hooked the $1 million dream. It looked like certain doom, but then Andre took the ref. Hogan ran in and whacked DiBiase in the back with a chair, and Savage recovered and hit the big elbow for the win. And then I originally wrote that Hogan, Savage, and Liz celebrated together. The more I watched it, the more I realized it was Savage and Liz celebrating alongside Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
They were his posse.
Sure.
One of his posse had just won the belt.
I thought, this is a revelation. Boy, was Randy Savage a good worker.
Fuck yes.
Shocking.
Well, so was DiBiase.
DiBiase was as well, but he was totally overshadowed in this match by Randy Savage.
Well, yeah.
Savage was awesome.
Four guys in the 1980s who would not have been overshadowed by Randy Savage.
He was great. This match was actually kind of a disappointment. I mean, they'd worked numerous times throughout the evening.
That's true. It was, if my memory is right, it was Savage's fourth match and DiBiase's third.
Yes. So Savage, you know, he wrestled many times. It's only went about 8 minutes, I would guess. So, you know, as far as like Randy Savage DiBiase matches goes, I could imagine one 50 times better. But there's nothing wrong with it.
Nope.
And Savage won the title, and it was great.
It was
fine match.
Standards for WrestleMania main events are higher now than they were in 1980. What would this have been? 88? Somewhere around there, but it was fine. Then had a battle royal from WrestleMania 2 with 10 pro wrestlers and 10 football players.
Oh boy, this was not good.
It was short. When I was a kid, maybe I just had nostalgia talking, but because I kind of enjoyed this for what it was. But when I was a kid, my cousin and I watched this match about 47,000 times.
Oh, my God.
We would rent WrestleMania 2 every weekend. We watched this match, and we would watch the British Bulldogs against Greg Valentine and Brutus Beefcake, which is probably better.
You don't say!
I suspect it was better. It was largely every battle royal ever.
Why would you watch this match 47 times?
You know, I can't tell you.
There's like
it certainly
no
was not
reason for it.
Warrant that. I can only
I
tell
mean, even when I was a kid,
when
it was
I was 10, there was something about it that I thought was cool.
When I was a kid, I would watch, like, you know, the Randy Savage Ultimate Warrior match 47 times.
That was better.
I would watch Savage and Steamboat 47 times. I would, like, watch good matches over and over again. There were never, like, bad matches that I was like, man, I'm going to watch this Bushwhackers against Nikolai Volkoff and the Iron Sheik match over and over. Actually, that's a bad example. But you know what I mean.
I thought it was good. I really can't tell you why. I can't tell you why you've seen many battle royals worse than this.
I guess.
Well, most... Because, again, at least this was short. They got down to six guys within in no less than 4 minutes. Or no more than 4 minutes. They got down to six guys quickly. So it all built up to a confrontation between William Perry, the Refrigerator, and Big John Studd. This was in Chicago just a few months after the Bears were in the Super Bowl, so the place was just going apeshit. And the confrontation was brief. Studd rocked Perry with an elbow and dumped him over the top rope. Everyone was pissed. Fridge offered a handshake. Studd accepted, and Perry pulled him outside to the floor to eliminate him. What a dick. So the final four was Andre the Giant, the Hart Foundation, and Russ Francis, who was a football player.
I thought he was a guy from Girls Gone Wild.
I don't know. Maybe. He did not last long once he got down to the final four. And then the Hearts were double-teaming Andre, and then he knocked Anvil out of the ring with a boot and threw Brett over the top rope on top of him to win.
A pretty darn good battle royal, you wrote.
That's what I wrote.
Standards, everybody. Standards.
Most battle royals suck.
Let me tell you a great
match. I don't
think
this sucked.
Randy Savage and the Ultimate Warrior loser must retire. They didn't show the entire thing.
That pissed me off.
I'd like to see the entire thing, because I remember at the time this was just like a blowaway match, largely because everybody expected it to not be very good because Warrior was in it, and Savage actually got a great match out of him. I don't know how great it would still be today, but somebody on one of the random shows asked, when did people first start kicking out of finishers? And we were like, oh, man, I don't know, probably the late 90s with Rock and Austin and those guys, probably at WrestleMania started kicking out of their finishers. Wrong! wrong. About 1991, when
I can tell you the exact date.
Savage went up WrestleMania 7, hit the flying elbow 5 times to supposedly end the Warrior's career, but Warrior kicked out, and then Warrior made his big comeback, hit the press slam with a big splash, made the cover, and Savage kicked out, and Warrior was so shocked that he kicked out that he began questioning the gods. And almost walked out and gave up his career. But then he came back. He beat up Savage. Gave him a series of shoulder tackles. Put his foot on his chest. 1, 2, 3. And that's when they did the big angle where Sherry, who was Savage's manager, beat him up. And Liz ran in through the crowd to make the save and reunite. And that, of course, set up the big SummerSlam match made in heaven, match made in hell. Which, by the way, that match was made in hell, if I recall correctly. And, yeah, there you go. This was pretty damn good.
Before we saw it was very good, and...
it was all Savage.
It was all Savage, and it was all theater. There was not great wrestling going on. There was fantastic storytelling being done. And then the angle at the end was, very simple. There was a guy. He had an ex-girlfriend that he was mean to. They broke up for a few years. Then he had another girl who was a bitch. And then she turned on him. And the old girl came back to save, and everyone wanted to see them get back together. And they teased and teased and teased. They finally did the big embrace. Everyone went crazy. Everyone was happy. All was right with the world.
Grown people were crying.
Yes. This stuff is not... It's not complicated.
Not
it's not hard.
It's not hard, everybody. Stop trying to act like it is.
Yes.
It's not hard.
So, I am pissed that we did not see all of this. Because, especially looking back, this was pretty clearly the best match of this set. And the finale here was Hulk Hogan versus Sergeant Slaughter at WrestleMania 7. Same show, I think.
I actually did watch this match a bunch of times. I remember this match vividly, particularly when Hulk Hogan gigged in the most blatant manner possible and then slid the blade to Earl Hebner.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is history because Hulk Hogan, think about this, everybody. He was trying to become the first three-time WWF champion ever.
Yeah.
I'm certain that since this, someone has won that belt three times in a calendar year.
Oh, I think Punk.
May have.
I'm sure somebody has.
Punk's technically was the other title, but the point still stands. Yes. It's times have changed. So, actually, Hogan and Slaughter were pretty good here. I believe General Adnan was fucking stuff up left and right. Hogan went to the middle rope. And here's what they were trying to do, and I know this because they did it correctly a minute later. Hogan went to the middle, was supposed to go to the middle rope. General Adnan was supposed to grab his leg. Slaughter would run over and hit a press slam for the heat. Somehow this got fucked up to an embarrassing degree. Hogan went up there. Adnan moved to grab his foot and then backed off. Hogan looked at him. Slaughter came over to the corner. Hogan jumped. Savage caught him in the gut. Hogan no-sold it and raked his eyes. Just shit. Just shit. And then later, Slaughter is going for a cover, but suddenly there is no ref because Adnan has the ref. So the ref comes in to count two. Hogan kicks out. Then Adnan takes the ref at the right time, so Slaughter can hit him with a chair to set up the most blatant blade job ever.
Yeah.
They did a long Boston Crab spot. They did a long camel clutch spot. And then Slaughter had Hogan down in the ring. He got the Iraqi flag, put it over Hogan and made a cover. And then here's what happened. Hogan kicked out. He hooked up. He tore the flag apart. He had three punches, the big boot, and the leg drop, and he won the match.
Yeah.
Hogan did not fuck around with his comebacks.
No.
When it was time to take it home, he took things home.
Yeah.
Things ended quickly.
So, there you go.
Yeah, this was actually a pretty good match, all in all.
It was fine. Told a decent story.
He did tell a decent story.
Yeah.
That was everyone. Those were the best matches of WrestleMania as of 1991.
Well, I'm sure they had another collection. They had Savage Steamboat and
Hogan Savage, for that matter.
Hogan Savage. Warrior Hogan.
Warrior Hogan.
Probably not as good today as it was back then, but back then, another miracle. Ultimate Warrior had a lot of decent matches. I shouldn't say a lot. He had some decent matches.
He managed to come through on the big stage.
Yeah.
I think Rick Rude had a couple of great matches
with
him.
Rude had matches with him. I remember when I was a child, I went to a house show. I saw a Warrior-Rick Rude match. And then I watched them on pay-per-view at SummerSlam do the exact same match. And I went, what bullshit? This is fake.
I remember very early as a wrestling fan, it was one of the best of the WWF tapes where they did a Hulk Hogan-Harley Race street fight. Like Philadelphia, and then they immediately showed the rematch from Boston, and it was spot for spot the exact same match.
Oops.
They did this on tape, a commercial tape.
Well, you know, sometimes they, you know how it is. You don't know how it is, do you?
I guess not.
Everybody, it is Tuesday night, time for shout-outs. I know I thought I was going to say headlines.
Actually, I kind of did.
I don't have any headlines here.
The headline is, we have shout-outs.
Let me see if I've got any wacky headlines here. Let's see. Nope. Can't find none.
No headlines, no shout-outs.
No headlines.
No news.
Sick groom marries bride in Skype wedding.
Huh.
Yeah. Not funny?
Not really, no.
This is from Jordan. After being a shitty freeloader since November of 2006, I finally joined the glorious empire. My wonderful girlfriend signed me up for my 27th birthday for 3 months. I plan on staying longer. Instead of some insane rant or citing what I think sucks or rules, I'd just like to thank both of you for doing such a great job week in and week out. Well, thank you. I have no valid reason for not signing up much earlier, but sometimes shit just falls through the cracks. It is amazing how many times I listen to these free shows, re-listen to them, but seriously, it's frightening. It is a wonderful... Did you watch as many times as Vinny watched the WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal? That's my question. It's a wonderful hive of wackiness. Happy to be on board. Perhaps not on the board. You make my days much easier, whether it be work, working out, or my shitty, shitty commute to work. All the best from Minnesota. Well, you live in Minnesota, Jordan. What do you expect? It's always snowing there, I've heard. He also made a song a couple of years ago as a freeloader. We're going to play it here. Help Kali.
Help, I need some help. Not just any help. You know I need someone. When I was younger, so much younger than...
That is how it's done. Short and sweet. Thank you very much, Jordan. If you haven't figured out by now, if you sign up, you get a free shout-out. That's what we're reading right now. Of course, you sign up, you get all of our radio shows, not just the one free show per week. What the hell good does that do you? It doesn't do you very good at all. Sign up, you get 15 to 20 radio shows every week, and our full archives dating back to 2005. That means every show we have ever done dating back to 2005... And you can go ahead and do the math. 15 to 20 shows a week, every week, for 6 years. Well, that's how many are in the archive if you sign up right now. No extra charge. It's $10.99 every month. You can sign up for a longer-term subscription if you'd like. But for that fee, you get all the new shows, all the archived shows. Wrestling Observer Newsletter, new and archived. Figure Four Weekly, new and archived. Our message board. Just head up to the front page. You know what you can't get. But you get it all if you sign up. This is from John, who is from Illinois. After 1 year plus, I am cashing in my shout-out. Thanks first to Brian. Thanks for all the shows, keeping the site awesome, and for your book that I finally finished. Good work. I really enjoyed it. Also, thanks to Todd, the most underrated person on the site, to Lance, a man who needs to be on weekly, and to Dave for being Dave. Also, thanks, Vinny. You're cool, too.
Sweet.
And now a special thanks to Granny. If you have a girlfriend, wife, or both, and you want them to try Figure Four Weekly, try a Granny segment. My girlfriend thought it was funny and, quote, sweet. If you think your significant other would have this reaction, consider trying a Granny segment. Freeloaders, if you don't get to hear Granny, it sucks to be you. Sign up, you fools. It isn't that much, and you won't regret it. It was awesome when I used to walk to class every day, and now in my commute to work. And finally, a long overdue fuck you to Michael Cole, Dixie's Twitter, David Otunga, Daniel Bryan, and Michael Cole. Fuck you, no one is a fucking coal miner. Long live the Zack Attack! Whoa, 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 you know it! I think that's supposed to be woo, but...
Traditionally, yes.
He left out an O on each one.
Typo.
John, you're the man. Very much appreciate that fine shout-out right there.
That was a great shout-out, actually.
All right. Let's see here. This is a big shout-out that I'm going to save until the end. All right, this is a shout-out from Brett. I figured I should wait at least 2 years before cashing in my shout-out, since that's how long I lurked before joining. A couple of years ago, I realized I was in my mid-30s and just spent the last 20 years in a van with no windows, living off a diet of quarter-pounders with cheese and imported ale, accompanied by three dudes who unceasingly quoted Seinfeld.
Bad times.
That was my wake-up call. I knew it was time to find a new way of life, before the famous words, "The road will own you," came to haunt me. This is when I decided to join the Figure Four Empire, maybe my best decision of the past 20 years. Attention freeloaders! Instead of buying that extra pack of smokes this week, put the money towards your subscription. Your lungs will thank you, trust me. And you'll be able to tell all, you'll get all your news straight from the source, instead of waiting until tomorrow to read it misquoted on some other site, which does in fact happen regularly. Also, not only do you get great audio from Brian, Dave, and Vinny, but you also get access to shows from Carl Stern, Oliver Kopp, the maker of the greatest pro wrestling sim ever, Mike Sawyer, and Michael Coughlin. Figure Four Online may just be the greatest bargain in the history of pro wrestling. Well, that's true. Since I'm at 228 words, I really have nothing to plug, besides the fact that I love to plug Tori Spelling from behind while tugging on her pigtails and yelling, "I'm doing Donna Martin." I will end this shout-out. Did I just read that?
That was sad.
All
that
hail,
was very sad.
All hail Emperor Brian and Prince Vinny. This is Brett, otherwise known as the Amish Sheik. Brett, thank you very much for the shout-out and for the extra $5 you sent.
Well, that's true.
He went over the limit. That was a good shout-out. Except for the part that's going to be made into a drop.
Any... One woman to name in his ultimate sexual conquest fantasy, and he chose Tori Spelling.
Yeah, teach their own, Vinny.
I suppose so.
Greetings, Brian and Vinny. About 3 weeks ago, I got a gift card and thus decided to sign up for a subscription. What a fine selection of audio programs to search through. With over 5 years of material to choose from, I no longer have to replay my supply of outdated Raw reports and old B&V or Observer free shows. I can now hear outdated Raw reports and old member exclusive B&V and Observer lives.
Get well wishes to Sir Oliver Humperdinck, a great talent and an even greater human being. He has a lot of friends standing in his corner as he faces a tough challenge. Listening to his 2009 Figure Four Daily interview right now, classic hump and a great episode. It was a great episode. It's in the archives. Shout out for the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion, April 19th to the 20th in Vegas. Go to CauliflowerAlleyClub.org and become a member. Annual dues are $25, same price for over 40 years. Glad you enjoyed some of the songs I sent back in the freeloading days. I'm attaching a few on a separate email entitled Songs from Free Thinker and hope you'll load one up for the show. Actually, we loaded one up. We loaded two up. One good and one better luck next time. But Free Thinker, thank you very much. And very good chance Dave and I are both going to Cauliflower Alley this year. So mark that down on your calendar. All right, we got one more here. This is, in fact, a biggin.
Is it big in length or a biggin?
I wonder if I'm missing some shout-outs.
Name
here.
Value? Is there a big star who sent in a shout-out?
He is a pretty big star.
Is there a big story behind it?
Let me just read this to you.
Your name is son Brian?
Here we go.
Your name is daughter Brian?
Here we go. Oh, I forgot to build this up earlier in the show like you'd promised. Sorry.
We'll go edit it in later. Don't worry about it.
Hello, Empire and friends. It is the Peach Machine here to tell you a little story. As you may remember, on the final sucky edition of my podcast, Peach Machine's Parade, I mentioned that I had a girlfriend, the same girl I met in May at the F4W Vegas convention, and her name is Kendra. Well, I no longer have that girlfriend. I have a wife! The same Kendra.
Oh, good.
We essentially eloped in October.
Wow.
I will spare you all of the incredibly insane circumstances which brought this about, and just get to the point. Crippler knows, so bother him with questions. Anyway, since the F4W convention in Vegas is where we started our relationship, we decided we need to celebrate our wedding there as well. If you are listening to this podcast, then I consider you a friend, or Ed, and I'm considering you invited to my wedding reception. It will be Sunday, May 29th at the Venetian, in some ballroom or something. It starts at 8 o'clock p.m., so don't leave Vegas until Monday, because you're going to have a rip-roaring, drunk-ass good time, and everyone is going to get hand jobs. In honor of the wildly successful podcast I started, and pass on to Ed, the drunk cast, we will be providing an open bar. There is no need to bring a present, but I would like anyone interested to please PM me on the board so I can get a rough estimate of how many of you nerds are coming. There will be plenty of hot babes to undress in your mind and put in your spank bank, and just maybe, one of you nerds can make out with one of them. Dress however the hell you want, and I damn sure better see someone wearing a fake WWE belt and some terrible WrestleMania shirts, because you just never know who will be in attendance. Eat 50 dicks, the Peach Machine. There you go, everybody. May 29th, Sunday, 8 p.m. at the Venetian. It is the huge wedding reception for the Peach Machine and his lovely wife, Kendra. You're all invited. So go on the board. Tell them if you're going to be there. Open bar. Trouble. Trouble is coming to Vegas here,
good times,
everybody. So there you go. That's the shout-outs for today. We've got a big day tomorrow. My God, I've got a lot of shows. Todd Martin is going to be on the program. We're going to be talking Bellator and all of the news. We're going to be having a brand new show in the afternoon. Josh Nason is going to be joining me. Freelance writer, a bunch of different MMA outlets, including Fight Magazine. We're going to be talking to Anthony Pettis, he of the Ninja Kick on the final ever WEC. That's in the afternoon. And in the evening, Dave Meltzer and I will be back. We're going to be talking to Road Warrior Animal about his new book. Three shows in one day. If you're a freeloader, zero shows in one day. So check it out. And don't forget Thursday, Lance Storm returns and another brand new Brian and Vinny show. If you're freeloading, you're missing out, especially with WrestleMania coming. See, WrestleMania season, the biggest time of the year. So anyway, check it out, everybody. And we'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.